Welcome to It Sounded Like a Good Idea at the Time, the podcast that was nearly defunct until I remembered about it again. So my name is Caroline, and I am here not alone. We got some really great feedback from the last time my co-host was with us. And now arguably it was from people who are our friends, but I don't always get even that. So I am here with Mallory Moyer. And Mallory, I'm so glad that you're joining me today.
Hi, everybody. And hi again, Caroline. Yeah, I think when Lindsay texted us from Europe on a group text and was like, this was a great episode, I was like, all right, I think I didn't mess it up last time. So thank you for having me back.
Of course. Well, not to jump right into Peloton, but our Peloton group text also felt the same way. So I felt like between someone who knew me in college, who I still can't figure out how she knows you all the way in Europe, to our Peloton buddies, I felt like that was a pretty good focus group of very, very biased people. So there we go.
Very biased to our pro me being on the pod. So I'm happy to be back and hopefully make all those listeners happy.
Yes. Well, and truly, like, I had every intention of continuing this every other week. And then I was like, I'm really tired of asking people to be on it just because that takes some kind of vulnerability in case somebody says no to me. And when I had Caro Chambers on, which was our last episode, I was like, this feels like a peak. So the only way to get beyond that was to have you back, who is even above Caro Chambers. I realized as I was setting that up, it's going to sound like a real
oh my God,
the best person I could have ever had. And so now here I am with you again.
If I am second best to Caro Chambers, it is like a deep, deep compliment. So I'm very happy about that. I know you know, because I sent it to you. I sent the screenshot to you after that episode when I was, you know, just creeping in her DMs on Instagram. Yes. And I was like, oh, by the way, I heard you on my friend's podcast. She's like, oh, I love Caroline. And we both freaked out. So.
We did freak out. And I had every intention of like being a functional human being during that conversation. And what we record with, you can turn video on, but I don't typically because it like lags. It gets really weird. But she was like, let's like look at each other. And I was like, okay. And so I was like actively dripping sweat the entire conversation because that is my nerve manifestation. And so at the end, I was like, we should take a screenshot. But like truly my hair was like dripping wet. My face was like a sheen that was unnatural. And that's how that went. But she was delightful.
Truly, truly was. I share that, like when I'm nervous, sweat, like any job interview I've ever been on, any, even now, like on Zoom calls for nothing, like book group Zoom calls, I just like, I sweat at the end of it. And I don't know why. I feel like I'm performing. I'm sure I'll sweat on this too, because, you know, I'm a delicate flower, but.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I had, in case anyone's a new listener, I doubt that anyone here is new, but if you are, I am a marketing director for a nonprofit full time, and we haven't had an office since March 2020 because nonprofits got pretty decimated by the pandemic because it's weird that during a crisis, people don't want to give a lot of money away. And so anyway, we saved some money by not having an office, but we now have co-working space. And so this week, this week was my first week into the office, and it's not mandatory, but I went for a meeting and it was just to discuss my upcoming maternity leave, and I could have thrown up. I was so nervous about it. And I'm like, what is happening? Like I texted my coworker and I was like, this feels miserable. Like I was so sweaty during it. Like my upper lip, I kept like wiping off indiscreetly. And I'm like, this is a disaster. These are my friends. We're talking about something exciting. And
right.
I was
These
like,
are people I know. Yeah.
I cannot handle this. And I think part of it is, you may not relate, and hopefully like 0.02% of the population can relate to this, but I still feel like I'm going to get in trouble if like my mom finds out I'm pregnant. You know what I mean? Where it's like, someone's going to be like, what have you been doing? You know? And I'm like, I can talk about my pregnancy. This is a totally fine situation. And it's like, this is my fourth time. Like I'm a slip and slide at this point. This is not.
Yeah,
exactly. So anyway, that's what I've been up to. Just sweating a lot, but really thrilled that you are here. Tell me what has been going on with you.
I mean, I guess also sweating a lot. Like it was 77 degrees in Connecticut today, which
climate change, man.
I know. And there's this weird cognitive dissonance now for me because it the leaves have not started changing until like 4 days ago.
Right.
So now my eyes tell me that it's autumn. And my armpits tell me it is not.
Well, and also I'm having a difficult time with the fact that you're in New England, which to me should be nearly in winter at this point.
Right.
And you aren't.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. You're welcome. Well, and our friend, our mutual friend, Amy, got snow today in Colorado, and she is coming to Charlotte soon. And she was like, this is like penance for me thinking about whether I should wear something sleeveless while I'm there. And I'm like, well, it was 91 degrees here. So yes, you should be wearing sleeveless. Yeah.
Yeah.
Misery.
But otherwise good. I mean, the school year is off to a, you know, good start.
What is good at this point? I really would love, like, as an icebreaker for every person in an interview. It's not like, where do you see yourself in 5 years? It would be like, how do you define good at
You getting through each day? I mean, Zoe's back at high school full time, and every single week we get at least one email from the principal that there's a new positive case at school.
Great.
Yeah. And she's vaccinated, and that's fabulous. Yeah. And she's really safe and she's really smart, but it's also just like, all right, well, I guess I'd rather positive COVID case emails than like Knockwood high school mass shootings, keeps me up at night, but things are good, right?
Well, the interesting thing about like mass shootings, so Norabeth is in first grade. She's back at school full time. She only got to go for a month of in-person kindergarten. So this was very exciting for us.
Yeah.
And so she came home the other day and told me about the tornado drill that they did, which I love tornado drills, very much a pro at tornado drills. But I was asking her about it, and it occurred to me they probably also do active shooter drills. But I wonder what they call them, you know, because you don't want to scare them. Like our preschool did shooter drills as well. But they told them like, we're hiding from Miss Emily, who would come around and like knock on their door or whatever. So I was like, well, tell me about the tornado drill, like picturing go out in the hallway, cover your head, you know? And she was like, we went into a different room with no windows. And I was like, oh, okay. So this is, but she continued, and I believe it was a tornado drill, but I'm also like, was this a hybrid shooter tornado situation? Either way, like, that sounds great. But it just occurred to me, like, do they tell them or not? It was very disturbing almost.
Yeah. I went to, a friend of mine turned 40 last month, and so we sort of had a group dinner with some girlfriends, and these are all the women are people I've met through this mom's club that I'm a part of, and many of them had their eldest begin kindergarten this fall.
Okay, yep.
And so one of them, whose daughter had started kindergarten, had the same thing, came home, and they had an active shooter drill and fire drill, you know, combo.
Yeah,
two for one.
We love that.
And she was telling her mom, she's like, yeah, I mean, this is, so what we have to do if there's a rhino in the school is we have to lock all our doors and we shut the curtains. And so it was very much like the description was shelter in place, but I guess they just sort of described it as like, if something scary is in the hall, you know, if it's a rhino, if it's an elephant, if it's something like that's in the hall we want to hide from. Ugh. And it was just, you know, and it obviously turned into this whole like, why weren't we notified and how did we not prepare? But it's like, you know, so I feel like I straddle this weird world where like since Zoe came to live with us full time, she started fifth grade. So like I've had a public school kid do this for years now.
That's
and
wild.
Every time it's horrible.
Yeah.
Which is not to say that like my friends who are going through this for the first time aren't valid in their like sheer terror about this.
Yeah.
But I think I also have some perspective of like, they aren't, a school's never going to give a parent a heads up about a drill.
Right. Like that's the whole point of it.
The purpose.
Right.
Right. So,
but I think
I don't know.
There's something eye-opening about it being like a concrete, like, cause you know, in abstract, like, okay, this will be part of their lives now. And this is just what we do. And our preschool would always email us the day after, like the day of, at the end of the day, like,
right. This, we just did this today.
This is what we did. Yeah. If they have questions here's how we described it. They thought it was very fun. But you know, it's like another example, how as a mom, you are an actress at all times because it's like, oh, that sounds so fun. Well, you're like also picturing the horror that actually represents. But to them, like, you're right. It is just a part of life. And that is really awful, but also there's something like comforting in the mundane to them, because it's like their lives weren't shaped by Columbine the way ours were. So it's like this, like Nora Beth was telling me in the car at Carline the other day, we've been talking a lot about Afghanistan and refugees. My friend Sarah has been saving hundreds and hundreds of lives of Afghan refugees.
I saw a bunch of people are coming to Charlotte to relocate, right?
Yes, yes, yes. And okay. So we've been talking about it a lot. And then her best friend in our neighborhood, Grace's mom was in New York on 9/11. So somehow in their like 6-year-old conversations, they merged like Afghanistan and 9/11. And so Nora Beth was like sharing with me their conversation about terrorism, which was so fascinating to listen to, because they weren't wrong.
Sick.
Yeah. Right. One, because they're six. Right. And two, like the way they talked about it was so like whatever. And Nora Beth's like, did you know before New York was attacked and a lot of people died that you had an actual ticket and they just like scanned it and let you on a plane? And I was like, Yeah, I did that thing.
She's
like, did you know now? Because she's only been on the plane, well, twice, but she's like, do you remember how we had to take our shoes off at the airport? And I was like, mm-hmm. And she's like, they didn't have to do that. And I'm like, they being me.
They did not.
Yes, I did not. Yeah. They did not have to do that. But it was just so funny, like watching her realize something that is totally normal wasn't, where I'm like, oh, this is generational separation. And I don't know how I feel about
and
it.
And this is the thing that, right. And that's the thing that she's like, whoa, that's the wild takeaway from this massive event.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, yeah, you're right. That is, there were real tickets. Okay. I don't want to have you on every time I have to applaud you for a book recommendation.
But I don't mind it.
Yeah, well, I will gladly give it to you. So, you know that I really love The Sanatorium. We talked about our love for an epilogue. I passed the recommendation on to Hannah because, of course, she didn't listen to the episode, whatever. But she did not love The Sanatorium.
Yes. And Chris? Your friend Chris, the chef, did she read it too? I feel like she read another one. No. She read The Push. She had read The Push and was like, and that was triggering. I didn't like it.
Yes. But she, I felt like, had similar feelings about it as you did. Like, this is super, super dark. But anyway, so Hannah let me back up. You recommended to me after that, you should read this book called God Save the Girls. And you gave me a very brief overview, to which I said, I am sold. Immediately. And I can't remember exactly what your like two sentence elevator pitch, that it didn't matter. I got it immediately. Basically, it's the story of two sisters who have grown up in the shadow of their father, who's a mega church preacher. He has an affair. What happens now, essentially? And I thought, I'm going to love that book. And I did. I loved it so much.
I
thought, I'm going to recommend this to Hannah, but the pacing's a little bit slower. She didn't really like The Sanatorium, whatever. And she texted me today that she had read it in 2 days and loved it. And for all three of us to love it, that was a book that sat with me for a while.
Same. I scrolled back in forever. Mm-hmm. And I first off was, you know, I was kind of coming to you with my tail between my legs because I had recommended a Peloton ride to you that kicked your butt and you were really mad.
It was so hard. I feel like you tricked me.
Sorry. But the verbatim I said is called God Spare the Girls. Daughters of a famous evangelical pastor learn he's had an affair. One of the sisters is about to get married and the other is about to head to college. So it's very coming of age story, plus wrestling with faith as part of that. They basically leave their parents' house to stay at their grandmother's empty house to process all that's going on, bond, and wrestle with what to do. And the elder sister maybe writes the mega church sermons behind the scenes, and the younger sister may not adhere to her purity ring.
It was so great I also felt like all of that unfolds really quickly. And then there's just this like, multi-layered. What does a church look like after scandal? Mm-hmm. How far will a church go to cover scandal? Which I felt like I really want to know the author's background, because the way that she wrote that wrestling of faith and both sisters' different reactions to it, I'm like, this obviously is not something that you could manufacture. And so I'm just very interested in that. But when you think about like the Carl Lentzes of today, and I have talked a couple of times now about the podcast, The Rise and Fall of Mars Hill, and what, how far churches will go to turn a blind eye or quote unquote extend grace. It, I felt like it captured that so well.
Yes. And I did not grow up in an evangelical faith. I know you and I both really appreciate a cult. So like I can, jokingly say I'm in the Catholic Church. So like, I kind of feel, joined a sorority, like I can very much get down with like chanting and incense. But hello, the Catholic Church abuse scandal. Last week there was another whole revelation of the Catholic Church in France of like, how do you?
Oh, really? How did I miss that?
Oh yeah, because it's awful and everything in the news is awful and it's like kind of too much and we're all a little saturated. But it's one of those things that it's like I continue to grapple with of, maybe not like this evangelical mega church, but the faith that I belong, the local church I go to and like I run a Bible study at and I have friends at and I participate and volunteer. Like one of the volunteer tasks I do is like basically helping maintain this database to make sure that all of the adults who volunteer at church have gone through this like sanctioned. Everybody in the Catholic Church to volunteer at a church needs to go through this training to make sure that you like recognize abuse, you understand who a mandatory reporter is, how to recognize, prevent, we shouldn't have this training. We shouldn't have this training. We should just not have people do these awful things.
Right, exactly.
Right. So like even me not coming from like an evangelical or coming from a different faith that also is like super messed up in the actual running of it.
Right.
I still got a lot out of this. I think there's so much of the story that is about sisters. You have sisters. Yes. I have a sister. It's like, there's so much about that. There's so much about like becoming like that weird time between being a teenager and a grown up where you realize your parents are imperfect.
Yes. For sure.
So like the church stuff aside, like if there's anybody listening who's like, ugh, I don't want to hear it. Like, I don't want a God story. Mm-hmm. It's really not about that. There's so much of like just people coming to truths and figuring out how they want to act.
Yeah, it's redefining their own structure of beliefs and what you're willing to compromise for that, because I think everyone has their willingness to compromise. Like, it's interesting, somebody close to me in my life went through a really long struggle with drug abuse, and I had mentioned like, it's funny when you would ask this person like, so did you use X, Y, or Z, or did you sell? Like, there was like this horror of like, I would never. Like, there's this like still a moral code of like, I will do some really bad things, but I would literally never do that. And I'm offended that you asked. So like, there's that level as well. Like, especially this deals like with purity and premarital sex. And there are things of like, well, I would do that if he were a Christian, but if he's not a Christian, like why? You know, like there's just like all of these things that we use to justify to ourselves, like, no, this is fine because here's what I am choosing to believe. And I felt like the nuances of that were really fantastic, as well as leaving you with a thought provoking ending that wasn't necessarily like tied with a bow, because it felt so human, you know?
Yes. And like the intro that you and I both gave, like you said, that happens in like the first two chapters.
Yeah.
So literally that's the setup. None of the things we've said thus far are spoilers. And then just the ending, you sort of close this book and you go, ugh, because there's so many ways it could have ended.
Yes.
And the way it ended, you're like, oh, this is probably the most realistic.
Yes.
I hope I would have maybe chose something different or better or more just. I don't know. It was such a satisfying and dissatisfying ending at the same time.
I know. I would love to do a book club on it because I'm like, everyone would take something different away. And
totally.
Yeah, it just felt so human. And I felt like that was a huge feat. But I do want to dig into more about the author's own background because it was.
Because that would be, that would give some like fascinating flavor to the story itself. Also, fascinating flavor. I listened to many of your earlier episodes about your Amazon original Kirsten.
Hodgkin. Yep. Well, there's Minka Kent. There's Minka Kent, and then Kirsten Hodgkin, who both appear to just be Amazon only writers.
They're just like Amazon bots.
Writers. They're not real people.
They're not real people. They just like come up with.
Yes, Bezos has like programmed a few words and they're like, spin this into a book, and they do.
Exactly. Have you ever seen those like Hallmark movie bots where they just like make them read scripts and they look the same. Anyways, yes. I read The Arrangement and
oh, you did. Yes, that's right.
Oh my God. And I went back on my Goodreads before we got on the phone to be like, when did I read all this? I read it in June and I just remember I'm not scrolling back in our text that long, but we just all caps. A lot about it because
that one was real twist. That one was real twisty, and I don't think that I've ever followed up on that on the podcast. So thank you because I'd forgotten about that book. But that is another one that ends, and you're like, "What?
What
just happened?"
Yes.
Yeah,
John just kept looking at me on the couch. Every single chapter, I would end it with or some variation of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, oh, what'd she do now? Oh, what did he do now? I'm like, come on. This is really, really complicated. He's like, all right, sure. But it was bananas.
A way that you're like, if you recapped the plot for our listeners, no one would want to read the book because it feels so convoluted. But something about the way that robot writes, I was like, I'm sold. I am so bought into this.
Beep, boop, bitch is all I can say. She's like, that robot knows exactly how to glue my eyes to a page.
Right. So. Take me to outer space for 12 minutes and then bring me back. I don't care.
So I read Gods for the Girls and recommended it to you in September. And before that, I got to read two books in August before. I had like a very big, like neither here nor there. I had a very deep, like middle to end of August melancholia of just like, everything is hard. Why are we still in COVID? Why is blah, blah, blah. That's not fun. But I got in two books earlier. One is called The Lost Apothecary.
I have seen that, which you know immediately because I've seen it on more than one person's Instagram. I won't read it for 3 years, but I have seen it recommended often.
I really loved it. I am always like you and I joked, we'll always get into like a cult situation, but I personally will always read anything London based that has like a history and modern day plot intertwined.
Okay. That is such a good niche plot.
It's so niche and I love it. And it's one where like, again, the people are like, there's two timelines. One is like in history and it is a woman apothecary and her shop and how like, you know, in her grief about XYZ, she sells poison so that like other women can like kill an abusive husband or kill a philandering boyfriend. Or, like, you know, so it's
okay. Well, that sounds great. That sounds great. Really fascinating. Mm-hmm.
And then in modern day, the other timeline is a woman who's coming to London with her husband for their anniversary and finds out he's been cheating. And so she's like, screw it. I'm going to go take this vacation. I want to. And sort of her just finding out about that apothecary and how she and just sort of how these two stories, and they're just about like flawed women who are trying to do the best they can and do the best for themselves. And it is so delightful. I love it. I loved it. I don't want to say I hope Reese Witherspoon buys it and makes a movie out of it because But it's just such a, like, I should go back and like cast it in my head because it's always fun to like
put famous
people in those.
Yes.
Oh man, it is just, it was one that I got to the end of it and like clapped. It was like, all right, that felt wonderful. I loved reading that.
Okay, well, when I read it in 2024, I will let you know. Yeah, we'll circle back on that. I'll scroll through our texts and see what we have from 2021. What are you reading right this minute? Anything yet?
Right this minute, I am reading, it's Across the Room, it's on a stack. I've started doing this funny thing where, like, honestly, I think it's like, Rachel Ware will post a book and I'll go immediately from Instagram. She's such a bibliophile. After she posts and is like, oh, I liked this, I'll go to my library, put it on my hold list. Fine.
Okay. Yep.
I'm really, really good at talking myself out of stuff.
Okay. That's a good thing to know about yourself.
Yeah. So what I've stopped doing is like, I'll look and see when I like go on my library. Okay. Does this plot sound interesting? Yes, it does. Put it on my hold list. Once I pick it up from the library, like a week or two later, I do not read the inside flap. I just will start reading the book.
Got it.
Because I feel like sometimes I'll open the thing and like read the flap and be like, wait, why was I interested? Was I like,
yes, you doubted your past self.
I doubted that I wanted to read it. So the one I'm reading now, I actually will go look at it because it has been interesting thus far. It is called Goodnight Beautiful. And it's going in like, it's a bored wife and a psychologist husband, and then he goes missing, I think, is what happens.
That seems like a trope I'm into.
Yeah. So, you know, and I have a whole stack of like other disappearances and shenanigans. So that's happening.
I had to take a break from all my thrillers because they were, one, all kind of becoming the same. One, because all of the same bots were in my algorithm. So God Spared the Girls was the perfect like end to that. And then after that, like I used to read Chick Lit a lot. And then all of those kind of started sounding the same to me. So that's when I got into thrillers, which are all the same. And I went back to Chick Lit and read The Layover by Lacey Walden. And it is, did you read by chance The Unhoneymooners?
No, I feel like that was one where I like put it on a list, got it from the library, looked at the flap and was like, maybe not.
It's like rom-com-y and but not Ellen Hildebrand rom-com-y, you know what I mean?
Got it.
Like, and she's great. I'm not criticizing her, but you know,
yeah, but she's more like long. Yeah, she's like long cardigan wrapped tightly, whereas some of the other ones are like cropped fitted jackets.
Right. She's like a Nancy Meyers movie waiting to happen.
She's cozy rom-com versus like chic rom-com. Okay.
Yes. And this is just, it's good. It is fast. It's a good palate cleanser if you need it. And now I am reading The Power Couple by Alex Berenson. And it is like Taken, but if Liam Neeson were a female, which is pretty badass. So it's like there's this 19-year-old is taken from her vacation. Again, this is not a spoiler. They're in Spain. She gets taken. And the book kind of alternates between her perspective of what she's experiencing as someone who was taken, her mom, who is high up in the FBI, and what she's experiencing, and then the husband, who you're learning more about his background as it goes. So it's been great so far. So I'm very into that, where it's like thrillery, but not in the same way of like, who killed the wife's mistress? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cool. Anyway. Now, what are you watching? Because I know we have some things to talk about there.
Yeah. So, I mean, Ted Lasso season 2.
Oh my gosh, we finished it this week.
Blew my heart up and popped it. It's like just everything. It's wonderful.
Very few shows, I feel like, have been as perfect as that has been thus far, start to finish. Yeah. There was only one episode this whole season that I was like, I don't.
The Coach Beard one?
Yeah. What
kind of like trip and balls nonsense is that?
What happened here? Like, was there a strike of every other actor? I'm not sure. But other than that, I felt like it was a perfect season because they gave it some weight without like losing how delightful it was.
Yes. Like there's an episode, no spoilers for anyone who's like a little behind. There's an episode at a funeral, but even that, it's like, it just lets people be human and like, the one character who's like, yeah, being around dead bodies is uncomfortable for me. And someone else who's trying to like talk about what she wants to have happen when she dies and how she wants her life to have meaning. Like, so it's even like a funeral, someone's death in the show, an actual dark topic. It's turned into like how everybody can approach grief and mourning differently. The show is so beautiful and perfect.
Well, and I think that, like, to me, it was so important the way the theme of mental health ran through the entire second season.
Yes.
But with every character who is so different, so it makes it such a universal theme without being schmaltzy of like, look, everyone, talk about your feelings. It didn't do that.
Like, I felt like it was... This is the token crazy person. There's not that.
Right. It was crazy, so layered.
Everybody's adjusting. It was everybody's got a journey that they're on, and they're all doing the best they can. So
yes, and I want Dr. Sharon to come move to Charlotte for a little bit. So,
she was great.
Yeah.
I also have really, really, really been enjoying not using the Hulu app because it's garbage.
App is literally the worst streaming app that's ever been invented. And we should have known that from the beginning when Alec Baldwin was the one who introduced us to it. Do you remember that from like the Super Bowl commercial like 14 years ago? And everyone's like, what's Hulu?
Yeah, I feel like after I unfollowed Ilaria, I just blocked all Ilaria.
Hillary
Thomas. Yeah.
Please my fellow
Massachusetts native. Yeah, I can't. Yes. Anyways, on Hulu, I have been watching and loving Only Murders in the Building.
Oh, with Selena Gomez.
Oh my God. It is the weirdest, most delightful show, and I love it.
Okay.
So the premise is, so Selena Gomez is one of the three main characters along with Steve Martin and Martin Short.
Which, how did she land this role?
I don't know. And I want to, like, she is a revelation. She is so good in it.
Are you serious? I'm having a difficult time getting my head around that.
Yes. Selena, like, this is sort of how I see it. I feel like I'm going to be completely reductive in saying this. I want to say the podcast already made this comparison, but, like, of the Disney people, like, Hilary Duff can act, not sing. Demi Lovato can sing, not act. Selena Gomez can act, not sing. It's sort of like they've all tried to do both, but like there's kind of a lane for each of them. Selena Gomez's lane is acting.
Exactly.
She is interestingly, so funny in this.
You know, we've had Exposing SMG on the podcast, and they talk a lot about Selena's troubles over the years. But one thing that they will say is like she would give up making music immediately. Like what she's interested in is acting, and music was a means to an end for her to stay relevant, like basically to make that transition from Disney star, because it's so hard to get cast when you're on Wizards of Waverly Place to like something else.
Adult. Right.
Yeah.
This is really very much that.
Okay.
It's her.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah. I highly recommend it. It's her and Steve Martin and Martin Short. They're all like they're elder men in this very fancy apartment building in New York City. And one night there's like a fire drill, like everybody has to leave the building. The fire alarm is going off and they're all like, oh crap. Like our new favorite true crime podcast is downloading or it's releasing an episode tonight. Like we need our Wi-Fi to get it.
Yeah.
They all end up, everybody evacuates the building. They all go across the street to this restaurant. And they realize, the three of them realize they all are listening to this podcast and are obsessed with it.
Uh-huh.
And so like instantly bond over this. By the time management lets everybody back into the building, they've learned that someone was murdered.
Oh my gosh, I'm into
this. So they're like, so then Martin Short, who's like this kind of eccentric like Broadway director and blah, blah, blah. This very like artiste character. He's like, oh, this is our chance. We will start a true crime podcast about Only Murders in this Building.
Got it.
She, as like a foil to their, like it could have gone very stereotypical of like these two bumbling old guys don't know what they're doing and yes. this like jaded Gen Z coming in with like eye rolling quips. There is that, but it's not like, it's really smart. It's really funny. She doesn't like her character, Selena Gomez. I don't care what she does, but the character of like the young woman is really like, she's deferential and, patronizing at the same time. Like she really is like, no, here's how we do these things. I know this because I, you know, I'm this age and of this time.
Yes.
But also guys, come on, get it together. Like, don't be fooled about blah, blah, blah. So it's, and they just try and like, everybody is lied about something. They have different suspects in the building at different times, including a really hilarious cameo by Sting. Tina Fey plays the host of the very famous true crime podcast. Nathan Lane is in it. Amy Ryan's. It's like, there's so many famous, fabulous people in this show, and it's really smart and it's really funny. It's really funny.
And well, that's good, really it's been on my radar. But we watched 9 Perfect Strangers. Have you watched that? Mm. Also on Hulu. Okay. It is excellent. Excellent. Good. Minus Nicole Kidman's accent, but beyond
that's why I was like, I don't know if I can watch that. It's just distracting.
It is very distracting. By the end, everyone else like overcomes that on her behalf because the cast is just so good. But Hannah mentioned that she had read on the last, when she was on last, that apparently Nicole Kidman stayed in character the entire time they were shooting, and thinking about that makes me so uncomfortable because
that's insufferable. I'm sorry. That's too much for me. Like that is just so
pretentious. But also picturing her using this particular accent as an Eastern European woman off camera with like not newbie actors. Like it's not she was the known and there was like this whole cast of unknowns.
That's deeply annoying and deeply unsettling.
I'm like, there's literally like, if you read the bios of this cast, you're like, this is a sparkling cast. And then picturing her staying in character, it is too much for me, but the show was fantastic. And then we had been waiting on Ted Lasso because we didn't want to go through it too quickly. And then we did. Yeah. So Only Murders in the Building was my next, maybe float it to David and see, but I started on my own, watching Made on Netflix, old MTV Made into a Cheerleader or whatever, but MAID
Made a cleaner of things,
of other people's things. Yes. I had read the book, I don't know, like 2 or 3 years ago. I feel like I had just read it like when we started the podcast, and I really loved it. It is not an uplifting one. And sometimes I've decided that I'm appreciating memoirs and books that aren't like Rachel Hollis self-helpy, because I am like actively rejecting toxic positivity of like, look how shitty my life was, but because I worked hard enough, now I'm in a great place. And this was not that. So it's not a feel good, but I didn't realize they were making it into a show. It's on Netflix now. Margaret Qualley is in it, who is Andy McDowell's daughter. Andy McDowell is in it. And it's just, it's a great cast. It is
It's on my list. I cannot wait to see it.
It is good. And I was reading something the other day, so Andy McDowell is playing a character with the mother of the maid, the main character. With bipolar issues, and Andy McDowell's mom actually struggled with bipolarity. And so like knowing that it's an actual mother and daughter co-starring, and she's basing it on her mother and daughter
with her own family experience.
Like,
wow.
Oh, this is a lot, but it's very good. So recommend Made, but not if you're like wanting to feel great about yourself.
Yeah. Not if I'm like on the edge of a breakdown. Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly not that. But if you are wanting to like really sink into that, then that's for you.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah. But okay. I don't know if this is on your list to talk about, but I know it's been over talked about, but I do feel like we need to mention Lula Rich because I haven't done episodes about it. And I know every other podcast in the world has, but do you want to talk about Lula Rich?
Always with whomever I can talk to it. Yes.
We watched it so fast.
Yes. And so, for, you know, my husband is a forensic accountant. So, like, his job is finding fraud, is finding, like, where people hid the money in doing crimes. Had such an interesting, like, every time we would, like, watch another episode, it's only the four episodes for those who haven't seen it. It's on Prime. It is worth every minute of your time. It's fantastic.
Yes.
It could have been five episodes because I think they leave out a lot that I want to know more about, but we can get to that. Feel like a fifth might have been too much because they would have just been talking more, but he just had like such a weird accountant, like a forensic accounting take on a lot of it of like, what was that all about? Where I was like, I don't think a fifth or sixth episode should be about the forensic accounting. That's not feeling for everybody, but it was like
a niche audience there.
Yeah. But like he and I would watch that episode because it's like fascinating to me. But it was so bonkers, so incredible, so like I had to turn to him after too. We like watched all four episodes together, and at the end, I was like, look, you know, I'm a stay at home mom. I worked. You know, when it was just us and Zoe, I worked the first year of Luke's life. And then when he was one, I left and then stayed home. I have made no income since then. And I said to him, I was like, I completely understand the draw. I completely get why so many people go, oh, you're telling me I matter and that my contributions to my home and my community matter. And like, so there was so much of the psychology of it where I was like, damn, I would have totally been in this cult. Absolutely. I would have done it. I get it. I hear it. I understand why some of these people felt seen. And then some of maybe the more desperate ones, desperate financially of like, I really do need this help. Why it was so appealing.
Well, and then you get into the point too. Lula wrote in particular, because I think the psychology is the same for most MLMs where they know very targetedly who their target audience is. And it is to your point, stay-at-home moms who are feeling the tug for more, whether that's out of trying to find a purpose or whether that's out of guilt or whether that's out of boredom, whatever. It doesn't, the need for the purpose doesn't matter as much as they're fulfilling that for you regardless. Right. But what's interesting about LuLaRoe is their buy-in was so expensive that then they really did entrap people because you had to stay in it. Like so many now are like, I don't know, $100, a couple hundred dollars, which to a lot of people is still a lot of money, but being able to make that back or cut your losses and leave when you feel like it's not working is easier to do than $5,000 or $10,000 when you've taken out a second mortgage on your home to make it worth it. Where like the way that they broke that down, I felt like was really poignant because it's like, that would appeal to a lot of women for that reason. And so many of us know women in businesses that are like, oh, sweetie, like, no, because there are already 14 Rodan and Fields salespeople here in this zip code. So like you don't need, you're not going to be the one to like really shake the tree now for Rodan and Fields, you know, like it is so hard to watch that and be like, I want to be supportive of you. Also, this ain't it, boo.
Yeah. Also, yikes. No, thank you.
Well, and the other thing that I want to bring up about, and it's not necessarily about network marketing as a whole. I do have thoughts on that, but I think it's the intersection of grind and hustle culture, which I again actively reject, and then this kind of smarmy MLM infiltration of, I've noticed it with some friends who've recently signed on with one of the up and coming ones is Monate. Do you know people who sell Monate? I feel like that's
not
kind
Monate,
of like,
but I know, I mean, I've got a Rodan and Fields, I've got some Beauty Counter, I've got like, you know, so it's, I see them all.
Okay. So. Well, so Monet has gotten pretty big here. It has a huge following in Nashville. And then for whatever reason, like the groups that I'm in, there's a big bridge between like Nashville and Charlotte. Right. Okay. So one of the like main people pushing for Monet, and she's making like hands over fist money, like disgustingly huge amounts of money, and truly, yeah, and genuinely good for her for that, like whatever. But the messaging that gets filtered down is, you can do this from your phone. You can do this while you're at the playground with your kids. You can do this while you're nursing your baby. And it's like, but why are we saying that that is a positive thing? Yeah. Always? Like, yeah, because then people that I know who sign on are like, this is so great. I'm out here swinging my kids and also selling people shampoo. And it's like, but you don't have to. Right. You can separate those things. Like,
yeah, because then they don't, it doesn't have to be maximized. Murky. Yeah.
Right. Because many of us who leave the house to work are like, I don't want my work to follow me anymore. Like, I want to leave work at work and spend time with my kids. But it starts to become super murky. And I saw recently a post that was like, I knew from watching this convention that I wanted to raise my kids in this. And I was like, I hate this for you. Like, it just becomes so, to borrow a word that Hannah uses a lot, like insidious of, it is very much okay to separate work and personal life. And I reject the notion that it's not about balance. It's about integration. Like, no, it's okay. No, it's very much okay not to integrate those things.
Compartmentalize things. I mean, I know I had sort of like, I had guilt about that when I sent Luke to school, you know, starting preschool and then doing more days of preschool. And then his preschool has a camp over the summer and he went 5 days from 9 to 1. And I was like, I really struggled with that. I was like, but the following year he's going to go to kindergarten. And like, I chose to stay home so I could be with him and blah, blah, blah. But I also like, what the hell am I going to do with him every day from 9 to 1? He thrives here. He loves it. And so it was a lot of that wrestling of like, I don't want, like, if I'm with my kids, I want to be with my kids. I struggle to get, you know, to put my to-do list down, to put my shopping list down sometimes, just because there's only 24 hours in a day. But like the idea that I would feel like I won something by being able to half be with my kids and half make this make money seems just so, that's just very dark to me.
Well, and it is, because I think many of us who have a hard time separating it anyway, like part of the choice that I made for childcare was I wouldn't do full-time childcare for my kids despite working full-time, which was a choice that I made. And there are repercussions to that, that there are plenty of times that we're playing a game that I'm like, hang on, I need to check my email, or let me just reply to this text or whatever. And part of that is just the culture of we're always accessible at this point. But I know the damage that does psychologically. So to make that a selling point to moms, because then to me, what the other side of the coin means is like, well, if you aren't using your park time sitting on a bench to make money and sell people shampoo, then
Why aren't you living up to
some potential that you should have? And again, it all comes back to, it's a real manipulation on empowering women, because it's actually devaluing women, that if you're not doing this, then you're still not worth it. You know,
right. Like, but what you're so doing as is, which is already too much, is not enough. And it does not matter. I mean, there was such a piece of it too. Like, I know we talked a little earlier with God's Fear the Girls about just how faith and sort of how a religious organization or how like a faith community can impact people. There was so much of that because the founders, like, and through their faith, like, they're just like this prosperity gospel of like, we have been given success financially because God has given it to us, because, and therefore we must extrapolate from that we are good people and are doing good godly work.
And then beyond that, God is calling you to this too. And
he wants you here too, because
I get real prickly when people are like, I know that God wants me in this business. And I'm like, speaking specifically about like network marketing, especially when it's one that it is impossible to win these odds. Like someone signing on newly to Rodan and Fields. You're not, because the way you're making money isn't through selling the product. It's through recruiting, and people have all been tapped out from that. So unless you're in a brand new company to a market, like, yeah, there is success there. Obviously, LuLaRoe showed that. Monate has shown that. But it gets tricky when you start to enmesh all of your faith with it. And I think a lot of current evangelicals who may be into MLMs would be like, well, my faith is enmeshed in everything. But I think it becomes really dangerous to start labeling things that you want to do under the umbrella of God is calling me here.
Yes.
Because I think that that can make things murky, because it's okay to just say, I would like to try this without it being like, it's because of God. You know what I mean? And I'm not trying to undervalue like God's calling on people's lives, but it gets tricky for me.
Yes. And it ties in like what you were saying about like hustle and like, you know, the hustle culture and this prosperity myth, I guess, of just like, if good people are rewarded for their hard work with success, with, you know, with things or with riches or whatever it may be. It's like, And you can too, you know, God loves you, so you can be this also. It's like, it's like when money comes into it, it just seems so icky. Like I can't think of any other word, you know?
That seems to be the primary selling points of these. Like I was, there's this Monate girl who I cannot unfollow because I'm fascinated by her, and I will, I will text you later who she is so you can follow her. But she talks a lot about like, it's, and I know her personally, so that also makes it a weird thing, but she is like, I don't want to hear your sob story about what's keeping you from doing this. We all have sad stories, just work harder. And I'm like, yeah, I guess. Also, you know, and then she's like, look at all these people with their, look at all these people with their leased Cadillacs. And I'm like, right. Okay, well, that Cadillac is not going to solve a lot of like the trauma that they're carrying with them, nor is the shampoo. Yeah. Also, let's look to this because they're on the hook for that lease, regardless of how many units of shampoo they keep selling. So
exactly. Their bill comes every month.
Right. Perhaps that $500 that they now are on the hook for this car that they shouldn't have had in the first place, that feels like there's some entrapment in there. And so it's like, yeah, you can sell that this was a faith thing, but at the end of the day, it's all about making somebody money.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, you were asking earlier what books I'm reading now. I have that one that I just started, but another one I'm reading that does actually tie into this. Have you heard of the podcast, The Lazy Genius?
Yes, I have. Yes.
I mean, obviously nobody listens to any podcast but this one. I just need to like make that crystal clear, but I've heard there are other ones.
I've heard that there are too. And I think part of why I stopped recording this one was I stopped listening to some because I'm like, who needs podcasts? And then I was like, oh, well, I actually do. I started listening to, I'll tell you about the one I've been listening to after this. But I was like, actually podcasts are great.
They're actually great. The Lazy Genius, a lot like, it's one, in a way for me, it's one of those memes, like, you know, when people will share a meme and be like, oh, I feel attacked. I sometimes feel that with a Lazy Genius where she's like, isn't this a great idea? And I'm like, oh, people aren't this organized for this topic. Oh God, like mine is way more intense than this. Is this a problem? But it is, I know it is. But she had she had a guest on her podcast a couple of weeks ago, and I instantly went and like shared with one of my friends, and we've been working through these kind of issues, and she bought me the book. So I checked it out from the library and said it was great, but then it appeared on my doorstep the next day.
Oh, how sweet is that?
The book is, I mean, it was her birthday and she sent me a gift. Like she's a dream for my life. Anyways, the book itself is called Try Softer.
Okay.
By Andy Kolber. And I'll just read the back because it ties into this, and I've read two chapters of it and I was like, holy shit, this is going to change my life. And I really need to like give myself the time for this. So
in are a world you about to sell me on an MLM though? Like, cause this I feels might. Like a real build up for this is a big
it's a
opportunity.
Book. It's a book. It's just a book.
It's a program.
Right. In a world that tells us to try harder, it's time for something different. It's time to try softer. We can't seem to escape the allure of the try harder gospel. The message that if we just keep going, keep hustling, keep pretending everything's great, we'll find success and happiness. But clinical therapist Andy Kolber knows firsthand where this path leads. White knuckling leaves us overworked and overwhelmed, exhausted, and numb. There is a better way. In her book, Try Softer, Andi shows us through the latest psychology, practical exercises, and her own story, how God specifically designed our bodies and minds to work together to process our lives and overcome obstacles. Trying softer is sacred work, and while it won't be perfect or easy, it will be worth it because this is what we were made for, a living, feeling, connected, beautiful life.
Well, that sounds fantastic. Yeah, that sounds excellent.
Yes. She said it's like in this book, you'll learn how to know and set emotional and relational boundaries, make sense of difficult experiences you've had, move through emotions rather than get stuck by them, and grow in self-compassion and quiet your inner critic. Like, yes,
all things, please.
I know I need. So yeah. And I just, in listening to sort of what she means and how she's looking at this, like she was talking in her appearance on this podcast a lot about like capital T trauma versus small T trauma. Mm-hmm, but just that everybody's got something. Everybody has something that like has hurt them. And instead of pushing through, which is the culture I think we find ourselves in. We're talking about that with, you know, with LuLaRoe, just sell harder, mm-hmm. just try harder. With work, with stay-at-home moms or working out of the home moms or working at home for an out of the house company mom, like whatever it may be, it's always do more, try harder, be hustling, blah, blah, blah. And the idea that try softer is going to be the thing that like actually lets us exhale a little bit is deeply appealing to me. And yes, I've read two chapters and was like, whoa, I need like a notepad and some tissues and a glass of wine and I'll come back to this. But, so I'll report back. Maybe I'll come on. If you have me on again, if people are yes, you know, well, if Lindsay likes my appearance friends. Again, so well, yeah, yes. our three friends who think I'm great.
Yeah, based on the four friends who will let us know that they like this podcast, yes, I will absolutely have you. Again.
Not Hannah. She'll never
hear this. I don't even think that I told her we were recording, so I'll just let her know to upload it. But
let her know.
Speaking of podcasts on a completely different level, have you mm-hmm. up there in Connecticut been following the story of the South Carolina family, the Murdochs, who have had, it's been on People, so I know it's made national news, but the wife and son were killed mysteriously in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Then weeks later, the father was shot, ? In perhaps an attempted murder, perhaps a suicide, perhaps none of. And then suddenly all these other murder ? Things got tied to this family. Have you been following this?
Ooh, no. But
okay, well, it's
now I need to.
You absolutely need to. And I need to find like a primer to send you so you can get caught up because it is, I mean, obviously we've been hearing more of it because it's local to us basically because it's in South Carolina. But what got me back into podcasts after a few week break was following the story and immediately I thought, I don't want to just read these articles. I want a podcast about this. And so my prayers were answered and the Murdoch Murders podcast came out. And I will say the story is A++. The production of this podcast is like, of not this podcast, this is obviously an A+ podcast, but of this particular podcast I'm talking about is like a C. It's fine.
Okay.
It is very listenable. It is fine. I will tell you, the host is a smidge insufferable because she really wants you to know that she works harder than anybody else and she's very tired. So those are things that you need to know. But again, the story makes it worth it. And I binged it so quickly. And every time a new episode drops, I listen to it immediately. And it's the episodes aren't long because she works so hard and is so tired. It's so like it's like 27 minutes and they are very good.
Okay. So I've pulled it up on mine. First off, one episode is Who Killed Mallory Beach, which like there's a Mallory in it. I'm in, obviously.
Yeah. For sure.
But episode one is South Carolina's Chappaquiddick. I'm from Massachusetts. Chappaquiddick is very much a thing that I understand.
This is right
so
for
like
you.
Now you're speaking my language.
There you go.
Subscribe.
Well, They do ultimately, as the season is still going because the story is still unfolding, they will eventually ask you to buy them lunch and or mimosas or buy treats for their dogs. So I do just want you to know to prepare yourself that that is coming. But it is good. She also doesn't like when people comment on her voice, which is fine. So just be aware that there's perhaps some fourth wall breaking that we might not always feel comfortable with. But again, the story is very good. Which then led me to, I had been listening to, now I'm not going to be able to find it. The Elizabeth Holmes podcast that came out like a long time ago. The Dropout. Thank you. Yeah. New great. Episodes are back. It's a great podcast. New episodes are back.
Are there episodes along with the trial?
The trial. Ooh. So there are trial episodes and I am fascinated by this story. There's lots of conjecture about whether it will play to the jury positively or negatively that she just had a baby because it feels like perhaps that was manipulated. And I'm just very into Elizabeth Holmes as a person, as just a general being.
Oh my God, she's a sociopath. I love it. Oh my gosh, I can't.
I do too. The minute that I found out that her voice was fake, I was like, I will follow you to the ends of the earth.
I will. Yes. Like the cult, I would have given Theranos money. I would have been like, yes, this sounds incredible.
Can you imagine being
you are
a
girl boss, you are hustling. I am a feminist. You're I am grinding. Empowered by I you.
Yes. But oh my God, I would have been in. Being like a wunderkind genius, because I do believe that she was.
I can imagine.
You or is. And yes, I can. Yes,
I can imagine that
in my grasp. Yes, and then being like, you know, what I really need to succeed, a different voice, and then that is what you chose.
Yeah,
it's similarly. A lot to
I cannot wait for the crap. I think it's on Hulu. Actually, there's a show coming out about. Oh, I can't remember her last name. Her first name is Anna, and she's like this grifter who, like. Pretended she was a German heiress in Manhattan and like stole all that money. Anna something. The only Anna I'm thinking of is Anna Greenberg, but she's a yoga and meditation instructor at Peloton. Not Anna Greenberg. Not she's a real person. I like her voice. Her voice helps me fall asleep. But yeah, so I feel like someone has made a show or like a mini series version of that story, which again also looks just bonkers. Like, how can you fake an accent for years? I mean, Ilaria.
Ilaria did. Millie Vanilli did. You know, they kept their whole shtick going off mic. But,
take notes, Nicole Kidman. They did that for years.
It's interesting, though, that any story I hear now, I'm like, I can't wait to see the documentary of that or listen to the podcast. And it's like, I could just read the article of like the actual story, but I'm like, I really need this. Like,
turn into entertainment. Journalist. Right. I could
buy but I won't.
To these newspapers and let them do their actual work.
Right. It's Jessica Yellen continues to coach me to do. And I'm like, I hear you, Jess. I believe in this, but I can't, I'm not going to. I know. Well, speaking of, also, these are some like real plugs for Hulu because Brittany Murphy. I know, me too. It's my least favorite streaming channel, but the Brittany Murphy documentary, which I didn't even know is being made, is coming out.
Injected into my veins.
Yes, put it is coming out in my body. October 15th. So by the time this episode comes out, I will have already watched it. But that is one that I am thrilled that they're talking about.
It's why it has not been like an international topic of ongoing like critique. I remember when all that was that, 2008? I want to say
I
don't know, but also like
I was at my
first
job still.
Yeah. So like between, 1996 and now it's only been like 4 years, right? My brother's 25.
Sure.
But I cannot figure out time, but I just remember so vividly that and her like creepy fat husband and just like,
Simon Kojak. All their,
and I feel like that was the time too when, cause she had been with Ashton Kutcher, but then he was with Demi Moore then. So that was very much like a yeesh. I went straight and narrow Hollywood. You went weird Hollywood.
Right.
What a sad, weird, dark story that I just want more of. But I also worry because it's just going to be sad. It's
going to be really sad. And like, you know, Dakota Fanning is frozen in time to me as the Uptown Girls mm-hmm. Dakota Fanning.
Oh, totally.
So I'm like, I'm going to have to grapple with the fact that she's like a grown up and probably smokes now. And so that's difficult for me as well. So there's just going to be a lot to digest, but I think emotionally I can handle the trauma that will put me through for the sake of entertainment for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I found too that like in my times over the last couple months of like feeling overwhelm of motherhood and adulthood and responsibility, I just revert to like pre-motherhood times. Like,
yes. Like so I feel like me, but pre-motherhood. Yes, for sure.
Yeah. Like maybe 17 to 24 for me, which is just a lot of like, right. A lot of like too much drinking, way too much eyeliner, a lot of making out with inappropriate guys and like the occasional Marlboro Light. And I feel like me going, so like John's going to his mom's next weekend to help her with some stuff at her house. So like, maybe that's going to be my weekend of like, I will
go back to really be,
I will go back to a time and just like be very invested in Brittany Murphy. Again, which I think
really feel that way. I'll tell you, I rode real hard on the Britney Spears following that whole issue.
But then
the mistake that was made by media was releasing too many documentaries about it. And now I'm behind, like you're three behind. Yeah, there's so many. And then too many podcasts about it. So suddenly I can't care about that anymore. So
it's too saturated.
I'm like, congratulations to you. You're overdone now. But Brittany Murphy, I'm like, thank you to whoever is trying to make her into the hero that I had always known she needed to be.
Yeah. Please make her. Let's have a Brittany Murphy essence. I'm very, very okay and here for it. Because then it'll give me a break. It'll give me a break from my if I'm not listening to a podcast in the car, or if I'm not listening to like whatever stupid Disney soundtrack the boys want me to listen to, I'm very heavy in rotation of like a 311 greatest hits playlist. Which
you're
is
there.
Like really. It's really like, this is youth music of like, I'm just like rocking out, going to the supermarket by myself, listening to 311. What's wrong with me?
Like, that's a lot to picture. And I like that. And
it's It's dark. It's okay.
I would like to just go ahead and dedicate this episode in memory of Brittany Murphy. I feel like that deserves its time too. So
I am so on board with that.
Awesome. Well, is there anything else? Cause you have notes. I have zero notes as per usual. Is there anything that we didn't get to? Because I don't want you to have existential crisis that we didn't get to all your notes.
It was the books and shows we talked about.
Great.
Yeah. And then we didn't really talk about Peloton, which is fine because everybody,
I always want to talk about it.
But, but we were also sitting here like mocking people who join cults. So, but also understanding that.
all of our cult adjacent talk, I did continually want to throw in, but we are speaking as cult members ourselves of this.
Totally.
So, I will say you are helping me come to terms with this. So you and I are tracking yet again, very closely on reaching our next century ride. So if you're not in the Peloton cult, every 100 rides is a big deal. Every ride is a big deal, but you get to your next 100, you are 100 ahead of me. And so we did our last century ride together. When I hit 200, you hit 300.
Yeah.
We're both roughly 35 classes away from our next 300 for me. I check you every day to like stay in sync. And it's obviously when I have this baby, it's going to be blown because you'll be able to ride for 6+ weeks that I won't. But I feel very strongly that I am 35 rides away right now from 300. And I'm like 51 days away from having a baby. And I'm like, does this feel like it's attainable? And when I sent that to you, you assured me via GIF that it wasn't. And I am still going after it. So we'll see what happens.
I'm good. And you know what? If you go into labor because we are on a climb with Kendall, it will be like the most joyful insane thing to happen.
Well, then obviously I'd have to name her Kendall and make her like long for the West Coast at all times. But that is something to really go hard for. And I am at that point of pregnancy at almost 33 weeks now that like pedaling gives me Braxton Hicks. And I'm like, this is fine, right?
Cool. I'm not like squishing the baby out. I'm sitting. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm sitting. It's fine. She's comfortable. So anyway, I'm working on that. And I just wanted listeners to know that that's my own personal journey that you are very enmeshed in as well. So,
I'm sitting here doing the thing of like, I should stay, like, I'll wait for you to, I'm not going to wait for you to get back on the bike after having a baby. I'm not going to do that. Because
no, do not do that.
But right. Also like endorphins are keeping me from like so many, just oof. The endorphins are helping. They're like 2 weeks ago.
Well, as
I think
we say,
there was, like,
happy people don't kill their husbands. We know this. Thank
amen.
You.
Amen. Amen.
Yeah.
Elle Woods knows what she's talking about. And truly, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Right. Has anyone proven her wrong? No.
No. It's been true for me. Everyone else in my household continues to live. Thanks
to
me.
I continue to not be a murderer, so I see nothing wrong with this.
Yeah, they all live because I feed them all 18 times a day, and they continue to live because I haven't murdered all of them in their sleep because of endorphins. So,
well, congratulations,
and because
to
I love them, because
well,
I
sure.
love them and care about them, but also like, oh my god, go away, everybody, leave me alone.
Yeah, secondarily, yeah. There's also this. Yeah,
secondarily, well, kindly go away.
Well, I'm excited to see what the next perhaps 35 classes hold, whether those come before or after this baby comes. But you're a big part of my cult experience, and I'm really grateful for that.
Oh my god, thank you. That's like that's high praise. Your second choice to Caro Chambers, and you're part of my cult journey. Those are like really kind things that you said to me. I'm so happy.
Well, thank you for joining me tonight. And bringing us back into a podcast rotation that may or may not continue, but thanks for letting me have a fresh episode. And
yeah,
as always, it's a delight to chat with you.
Always a delight. And thank you for having me on. It's one of those things where like, when you asked me whatever last week to come back on, it wasn't like a full Napoleon Dynamite. Yes. Mm-hmm. But it was really, it was like, fuck, I did it. All right. I can. Yes.
You did
it. Like me. So, yeah. Thanks for having me back. It's so fun.
Well, listeners, there will be another episode at some point in the future. I will guarantee zero things. But I would like for you, if you feel so inclined, to rate and review us kindly, us being just me. So I have to carry that burden on my own. Either way it goes. But I love seeing your reviews. So thank you for that. And then Mallory, thank you. We'll be back here sometime in the future.
Thank you so much. Have a good night.